Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Thursday, January 15th, the year of our Lord 2025. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're doing well this Thursday. It's a thirsty Thursday on the Chief Sports Network. I got some good stuff lined up for you in the morning show. Brad Muller, we call him the voice of champions, the voice of Carolina women's basketball and softball, will be on with JB. Big game at the Colonial Life Arena tonight at 7 as Texas comes calling. Texas handed the Gamecocks their only loss of the season. Gosh, these teams could play four, five, six times this year. And so the Gamecocks will be looking for a little bit of revenge. You know, that's one sport that continues to do well around here. And certainly lots of excitement about that particular home game. I bet the CLA will be rocking. Longhorns come into the game 18-1 overall, 3-1 in the SEC. Gamecocks 17-1, 4-0. Gamecocks ranked second, Longhorns ranked fourth. You know the drill. But a big game tonight nonetheless, and Brad will be there to kind of talk it out with JB. JB also spent some time with the softball program over the weekend, and I'm sure they'll get into some of that as well. And then on Inside the Gamecocks of the show, it's Alex Jones from thebigspur.com with our smorgasbord segment. We'll dive into a lot of interesting portal talk, recruiting talk, all that good stuff as we continue to cover the college football, our Gamecocks football programs off season. The portal is back, or not back open. It's been open, but the dead period's over. So visits start back today. You got Christian Clark, the running back from Texas, Talik Lockett, offensive lineman from Texas State. I forgot, I didn't tell you yesterday, I had it in my notes. He did opt out at Texas State last year to take the red shirt. Apparently things weren't going too well, but graded out the highest in group of five to that point. Again, coach's son, college coach's son. I think he's a pretty good player, but we'll see what happens. Caleb Herring, the defensive end edge from Tennessee, scheduled to be in. And then there are reports out there that Dara Adeyemi, the big, I guess call him a jumbo athlete. He's recently played on the offensive line at Bucknell, originally from London, England, went to the Taft School, new to American football. He's scheduled, according to reports, to be in on Sunday. So we'll see what happens. You can still have him visit. The portal closes tomorrow, but if you're in the portal, you can continue to visit and do whatever. So the deadline to get in is coming up. That's actually a little more important for retention for your current roster because they can't get in. So they're somewhat locked in. You can still just leave if you want. There's nothing against, no rule that says you can't do that. You just can't be contacted by other schools and things of that nature. I don't know who's enforcing the rules these days, but, that's what's going on there. And I think, you know, we're going to get into the portal a little bit, needs a little 2027 recruiting later. But, you know, I think that they probably could stand to close on another end or two. And we'll see sort of what happens and break all that down in a minute. First off, though, Gamecocks played a basketball game last night on the men's side. And it was bad. You know, Arkansas as a team, the last couple of years, South Carolina's played pretty well against. They beat them last year as one of two wins. They seemed to have Calipari's number, and they just got embarrassed in front of Mike Morgan, the good Lord, Sam Walton's ghost from Walmart, the Woo Pig Suey crowd, Bud Walton, you know, Nolan Rich, whoever you want to name. It was just an embarrassing loss. This team so far this year has been at least somewhat competitive. They weren't competitive last night, just wilted and couldn't keep up with the Hogs. Michi Johnson did score 29. Everybody else was off. Of course, they shot 20-something percent from three. Couldn't get anything going. Arkansas just outclassed them. That kind of shows you sometimes with Calipari's teams. When they want to go play, and they seemed to last night, they went and played. Final was 108-74. That score is probably closer than the game was because it was 108-65. Arkansas was up by 43, and the Gamecocks scored the last nine to cut it under 40. Getting beat like that, I mean, it happens sometimes, but getting beat like that right now, when Your record is what it is, 10-7 overall, 1-3 in the Southeastern Conference. I think it's 1-7 against Power League opponents this year. The losses are certainly starting to pile up, and you just don't get the sense this team, outside of having the occasional blistering shooting half, it was a half, not a game, a half, at LSU. You just don't get, you don't, you look down, and shoot, they got to go to Auburn next. Auburn beat Arkansas by 22 on their home court. You know, Auburn's got a great home court advantage. The SEC is not as good this year, but I'm not so sure South Carolina's as good. Hate to say that. That team went 2-16 in the league last year, but they were a lot more competitive, especially in certain situations. So, I don't know. I mean, you got a team that was put together predicated on being able to shoot well night in and night out. Lamont Paris said it that, well, the idea was that if one guy was cold, the other guy would step up and shoot it. And Michi was good last night, but that was it. And the defense just seems to be optional, you know. And a lot of times, from what I can see with my basketball, limited basketball knowledge, is that some nights they're never great on defense, right? But some games they go out and play tough and guard, and they seem to get after it. Last night, I don't know if it was just Arkansas was too much, but it just was non-existent, basically. I mean, Arkansas just, and so 4 games in, you know, there's still, what, 14 SEC games left this year. You know, you got to find a way to turn this around. I'm not, you know, I never say never, but it's looking very ominous, and that was embarrassing, you know, and it just keeps happening over and over. There's some stats I'm going to get into on the show about this, as far as what, just the bottom line, not KenPom or net or whatever basketball folks like to use to judge teams, you know, wins and losses. This is a quite a bottoming out, and it's the same old story no matter who the coach is with this program. You have a good year, can't capitalize, you go back and sometimes dramatically fall off. And that's unfortunately, you know, the Gamecocks at this point. So we'll see what happens. I think that program, you know, we spent the better part of 50 years around here looking for answers, and it's just, they just, no matter what, haven't come. I don't know. Maybe they're just doomed for eternity. Who knows? But I still, you know, my faith in South Carolina basketball has eroded through the years. When they first got in the SEC in the early 90s, you know, they were only 18 years away from the McGuire era and leaving the ACC. And the talk was, well, just get back in a big conference, get out of the metro, get in a big conference, they'll be fine. Because Carolina fans care about basketball, and they still do. The fans aren't the problem. I mean, the display of the fans, the perception of the fans on television is a problem. But there's people there at Colonial Life Arena, night in and night out. You just can't see them on TV. And I feel bad for those that have kept the faith. But it's just been a long struggle since then. When there's moments where you think they can get it going, it just goes back. And that's been everybody from Eddie Fogler to Dave Odom to Frank Martin to the folks in between. Lamont Paris, it's happening to him. I feel very bad for Lamont. I think he's got some good ideas in a tough situation. But this has blown up in his face this year. And you just kind of got to go, wow, what the heck? You know, I mean, this is a team built on shooting that cannot shoot. Bottom line. So I don't know what's going to happen, folks. I really don't. You know, that's it's very discouraging, you know, when your team just shows up and you've got a game against a team you compete, you beat pretty badly last year at your place, and then competed your butt off against in the tournament when all was lost, it seemed. And he's getting then Nick Pringle, who played for you last year, goes for 15-7. Nobody's guarding anybody, dude. I mean, it's tough. So they got to look in the mirror, because this thing could spiral out of control pretty quick here in the next 2 or 3 weeks, because it doesn't get any easier with these teams. You got Auburn, and then Oklahoma comes in. Oklahoma's not super duper. Auburn's not as good as they were last year, but you got to go down there. I mean, well, you know, I don't know. I wish I had more faith than I do right now. But this isn't a basketball podcast. It's a football podcast. I will occasionally address some things, because I know if you stayed up late last night to watch it, you're probably a little bit groggy and cranky and all that good stuff about it. There probably is a solution out there somewhere, just generally. But there are things that need to be done internally to make those solutions work at a sustainable level at South Carolina. We'll get into all that though. We'll talk more about it on the show. Don't want to all the football people to go, God, basketball. Yeah, nobody wants to talk about that. So, yesterday, you know, it was kind of some of the news that kind of got blindsided by a little bit on the show. I guess I got caught up in some things, didn't see the news on Michael Smith. That's interesting. I sort of said on the show, well, to heck with Syracuse, just come on back. And, you know, I don't know, with all the legal stuff involved, and if you're Michael Smith, I don't know. And the story is this: it's that he was just gonna, he signed with Syracuse, he signed paperwork, I guess, but then just was gonna come back to South Carolina. There is no national letter of intent anymore. It's a contract with the school for rev share and all that. It is binding contractually. Syracuse was not going to let him out of it. I don't know why you'd do that. I mean, if you think about the struggles Michael Smith had this year, and he walked off the team mid-year, and he was hurt and frustrated, I don't know that you're doing a very good job of evaluating guys and paying guys money if someone who straight up just stays at their old school and is just going to leave you high and dry, that you're going to force him to come play. I mean, what's the hope there? Oh, he's going to, I mean, well, he's already got a track record of when he's not happy or frustrated, he's just going to leave. So I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, I got a lot of respect for Fran Brown, but I bet if he sat down and thought about it, he'd just be like, man, you can just go on back to South Carolina. Just, I mean, I that's what I would do. No matter how talented he is, because if your heart's not in it and you're that far from home and you're Sarah, I mean, I just, you know, Fran Brown's not an easy coach to play for either. I, not me. You know, you can go find a tight end somewhere if you're the Q's. But I don't know that coaches are more collective people and stuff like that. But so anyway, that's the Michael Smith story. I guess the JB's been alluding to the fact that he the door was not shut on him coming back, and I guess now it is, for this coming season at least. But you know, I don't know. You know, he's a potential guy, and he played really well, I thought, his freshman year. And then last year, it was just kind of one thing after another. He missed the spring. He got hurt. He got behind. I don't know what the, you know, there was issues with that offense. You know, Shula seemed to really like Brady Hunt a lot. And then Smith never got a lot of targets. I mean, that has to, for a guy like that, that, you know, primarily, although he can block, primarily he's a big time receiving threat. You go through a game, you throw 14, 13 passes, Hunt gets three or four, you get one when you're in there. I mean, that's got to be just frustrating. So I do understand the football side of it, but that was pretty interesting news yesterday, and would have loved to have had him back and seen what he could do in this offense, but doesn't look like it's going to happen as of now. What could happen is the Gamecocks sign another running back, Christian Clark, who we talked about yesterday from Texas, supposed to be on campus now. There's varying reports of the different days, so I'm just going to say they're all going to be in this weekend. How about that? Because, you know, I got one report of this, that, and the other, and I ask about it, and I just was told this weekend. So, and Clark's in today, so does the weekend start today? Caleb Herring could be in today. So, I guess in college, I remember my weekend started on Thursdays, right? I didn't have many Friday classes at all. So maybe the weekend starts in college on Thursday. Who knows? But digging more into him, I think that he's just another guy that can go in there and compete. What's his outlook? Anywhere from starting running back to number two back to three back. I mean, the who knows with him. I do think that when you look at it, if he signs, there's kind of a difference between your Christian Clarks, Matt Fullers, Juwan Howells, Isaiah Augustavs, and then the two other guys, Sam Dixon and Jabri Coleman. Jabri Coleman's a younger player, probably a couple of years away or a year away. Not ruling it out because you just never know. A guy will get in there and he'd Stan Drayton knows he can play and all that. And then Sam Dixon's—he's, I think he's actually older than Christian Clark, but a guy that you look at and he's got to do some things at the college level before you can feel comfortable saying, yeah, he can bust up into that rotation. So running back's going to be interesting. Six of them, if Clark comes, and I feel relatively good about it, but felt relatively good about Chas Coleman too, didn't I? So who knows? But this one I kind of like. I like the chances based on some intel that I got before he got in the portal about his situation at Texas and the schools he was looking at and things like that. So that brings us to Caleb Herring. Speaking of Texas, he's got a Texas visit on the schedule. Just talking to some folks, they get some confidence South Carolina will get him. It's been an adventure out at Edge. So, and then with Texas looming, that personally, I look at that and I get concerned that Texas is just going to say, all right, we'll pay whatever because they stock up. This happened at D tackle a little bit last year. South Carolina had, I think, had a D tackle or two they were interested in. And boom, they visited Texas and that's where they went. And I think that when you look at Sark and you look at Muschamp out there now and their philosophy, D tackles, pass rushers, they'll oversign at that spot. That's smart because those guys are just so rare. You got to get them while the getting's good. And that's one thing Caleb Herring can't do is rush the passer. I think that the rest of his game is sort of in progress. Like I said, I think he's been inconsistent, but. As they say, he's flashed at times. I'd love for South Carolina to get him. I think that would be a solidifying guy in the edge room. That's a, if you think about it, well, what about, Kelby Collins? Would he be a big end that starts? And then, maybe Herring is the third down guy. Maybe they just rotate him. I don't know. But that, you got Collins, who's sort of a big end type. That can play out there, and then if you get this guy's a pass rusher, then you don't know the mystery men. Will they be ready to go play? I mean, it runs the gamut at edge. George Wilson, how will he be when he comes off of his injury? Will he be like Jordan Strawn, who clearly wasn't himself the following year? Will he come back and rebound just fine? That's a question. You've also got Anthony Addison and Quay Dodd. I keep mentioning them, two in-state guys. And Addison's the high floor guy that actually got on the field some last year out of Sumter. Shout out Hale McGranahan. Hale McGranahan may be, he may have this, if Anthony Addison and Julian Walker end up being good, which I don't expect them not to be, Hale may have an eye for edge. Man, I got to talk to him more about defensive ends, right? Because he kind of toted the banner for both of these guys, but he's an in-state guy. And then Quay Dodd is the bigger dude, the 6'5", 250-pound jumbo athlete out of Eastside that's got the upside to play. And he just gets better and better. He got a sack. I think he came in and got a sack this year at some point. So or how good are those guys going to be? Kobe Saki Pra is another guy that was a redshirt last year out of Georgia. They thought they got a steal in him at edge, and he again, how's he going to be coming off the injury? What are they going to get out of Desmond Umezulu next year? He's a veteran. I think he'd be a senior next season. What will they get out of him? That's another question for out there at the edge position, other than Dylan Stewart. So the more folks you have, and then Drew Collins, is he going to be ready? I don't know if I mentioned him or not. So the more folks you have, I think the better options. And I mentioned Julian Walker. No doubt he could end up in the rotation for next season. If he puts on the bulk and gets strong enough and can physically handle setting the edge and things like that, Julian Walker could absolutely start as a true freshman. He got that much better between junior and senior year. What was one of the most dominant players in the country this past season. But unlike Jazavian Currents, who's stepping into a role in the secondary, where you do need to be strong, you need to be able to tackle, you need to be able to cover. That mano a mano against a 6'7", 340-pound offensive tackle in the SEC at times. You got to make sure you can handle it. So, and that's the question with Julian Walker as far as if he's going to do it. There could be another edge that emerges. Not ruling that out, certainly. I do think they continue to want some depth on the offensive line. Could a receiver, because the numbers in that room, pop up somewhere? Yes. I do think that could happen, but we'll see how it all unfolds at the end of the day. But a receiver, edge, offensive line, I think that's probably where they're at. As far as the Desir twins go, I'd just like to say this: the kids from Florida State finally officially got in the portal. I love these guys. I think Daryl, who's the Mandrell, is the stud, right? I think anybody in the country should want Mandrell. As a true freshman last year, he looked like a grown man out there. Just big and powerful and consistent and does a lot of natural stuff. And then his brother's going to be good too. I mean, he's an edge as well. But the money for them, there's not going to be a lot of teams that are going to be able to meet that price at this point. There are some. And one is in their hometown that happens to be playing for a national title in their hometown on Monday. I'm not saying they're going to definitely end up at Miami. I'm just saying when you look at the spending trends and all that, plus Miami, because they're still playing, they probably hadn't circled back. And I mean, they've been active in the portal, don't get me wrong, but they probably haven't circled back and, looked at it. Certainly Texas, I'm sure Will Muschamp loves these guys. And so, we'll see. We'll see where they end up, but I don't, they're not going to end up at South Carolina. So I would just forget about that for now, or forever. And also, even if South Carolina had a financial package to put together, when you're talking about, that kind of player acquisition, because you're getting two for one, and a very an already proven special one, and another one that's potentially special, and they've got a long runway to play, so you could have them for years. If you're South Carolina, you're willing to make that financial investment, great. But other schools are too, and they're not coming off 4-8 record. A lot of them been to the playoff, that kind of thing. So then it kind of gets back with the money even to traditional recruiting. These guys are from Miami Norland High School. And I just kind of think Miami would be the no-brainer for that. And the more I think about this, when Miami was, Miami's off the schedule for the next 2 years. They canceled that series. They're supposed to come to Williams-Brice next season. I kind of may be glad. I mean, the Gamecocks were avoiding it because that would have been yet another time where, and in fairness, Virginia Tech did not end up that way. But it would be another time that you schedule a game, and then by the time you get to play them, the Gamecocks are playing this team that's really good. And you'd rather have that Miami team you played in the Independence Bowl a few years ago and beat. They've always had talented players, though. They're just kind of putting it all together, and we'll see what they do against Indiana. But yeah, that's the Desir Twins things. I think that it's pretty easy to sit there. Well, they need to go spend this money and all that. But like I said yesterday on the show, even Alabama people that cover Alabama, Bama fans want them to pay $4 million for Seton, and it's like they're just not going to do it. South Carolina is no different than most of the programs around the country, and there are some that have this, and I don't know what's. It's kind of funny because you look at the comments about, oh, what are we going to do? I mean, they're talking now about the SEC, all the conferences just splitting from the NCAA, and conferences just playing conference games, which is wild, man, and having their own rules per conference, totally wild. I think if they do that, the SEC needs to partner with the Big 12 because they're like-minded, and let the ACC partner with the Big 10. You play one crossover, get you make it like the NFL, AFC, NFC, SEC has its playoffs with the Big 12 every year, vice versa. Then you just play a Super Bowl like they did before the merger. And you still get a national champion out of it. I mean, I think some of the thought was that they would just not have a national champ. It would be, come on, man. What a bunch of stupid, anyway. But my point to get it back on topic, my point about team spending is, well, a lot of these schools, like they're interviewing the athletics directors from some of these schools that we all know are spending $40 million on a football roster this year. Well, how are you going to do that? I mean, yeah, outside NIL, okay, great. If you really look at the market value of some of this, how do you really get there? I understand the front loading part of it, and the commissioner of the Big 12, Brett Yormark, who I think that guy's really smart, by the way. He's one, I'm kind of like, yeah, he gets it to a certain extent and then doesn't. But he usually has some sense of common sense that you don't get the sense that he's just all kind of in it for himself. But he mentioned the front loading thing, and I'll repeat this because I thought it was just going to affect high school recruiting this summer because it absolutely did. But there are schools, and South Carolina did, for when I say front loading, the house settlement came online in July, whenever they got it settled. Okay. So after that point, everybody's subject to a cap. Well, the cap doesn't say, well, you got to spend it on this, that, or the other. It says you can't spend over that. Okay. And now you see like Ross Bjork at Ohio State beating the drum for there to be no cap. Oh, yeah, of course you don't want a cap. Of course you don't, Ross. I mean, we know. Yeah, of course you don't. But so what happened was, everybody's sitting on collective money and NIL money that for the next year. And so they just paid everything in advance. It's like a prepaid credit card. And so you have all the cap money left from, and the dumbest thing is they do it by semesters, from all the semester. And then everybody that enrolls early, you get all that cap money for spring and you got some left over. I mean, it's just, so that's why some of these schools, it's the usual suspects that prepaid everything, have an advantage. So my question is, are they going to continue to prepay? Is that ever going to catch up? Folks, it's 7:48 in the morning, your time. So I have not sketched out the advanced math to see if that would eventually run out. But that's what's happening. South Carolina prepaid a lot in all sports. Just wasn't as much. I mean, Georgia, same way, Bama, same way. I mean, those schools. It sounds crazy to say Georgia and Alabama are in the same boat as Carolina, but that's just kind of how it is. Now, I don't know how LSU is spending what they're doing, or some of these, other schools. Texas Tech prepaid everything. Must be nice. So that's why some schools have a lot more money than others right now, even though there's a cap, and they may not get in trouble for it, but they may. Who knows? Who knows? So that's what's going on. I did want to mention one high school recruiting thing. Maxwell Hiller has set up his official visit for South Carolina for the third week in June. The Gamecocks, I believe, are the leaders there. He's a five-star prospect out of Coatesville, Pennsylvania. It's in Eastern PA. South Carolina's been in on him. They continue to really, Sam Sirbe has done a great job with him, kind of taking the lead. Top five prospect in 2027 nationally. That's overall. That's any position. Per 24/7 Sports, the composite has him at number 10 overall in the country. So what makes him good? So I pulled up his film today. I'd watched some workout film of him and some sophomore film, junior film. Okay, so what makes him good? When you watch him, sometimes he'll miss a block. Don't get me wrong. But number one, for a guy that big, 6'5", 300, natural quickness and footwork. It just comes very easy to him to move. Really quick hands, good punch. Good technique for a high school kid. Obviously, that has to be, continue to upgrade it and be upgraded and stuff. The thing that stood out to me the most about his film, though, is once he gets his hands on you, it's over. I mean, that he locks in on a block, finishes blocks. South Carolina's offensive line last year, we didn't talk about it a whole lot. They didn't finish blocks that well. But this guy finishes his blocks. I would be surprised if there were very many times where he did not do that. And the Gamecocks are in really good shape with him. He's listed, projected as an interior guy. I think he's a tackle, to be honest, right now. Maybe a right, but maybe a left. It's kind of early, but did set up first official visit to South Carolina. My understanding is the Gamecocks are kind of, they're in really good shape to get him, but it's a long and winding journey. And I always say, beware of the early leans. Sometimes, like with Darius Gray, you get him after you're like, you don't think you're going to get him, but you get him. Sometimes you don't, like with Smoke Matthews and Tamarian Watkins. So we'll see. But keep an eye on that. If you're looking for a 2027 out-of-state prospect to kind of follow and lock in on, go follow him on X, Maxwell Hiller, out of Coatesville, Pennsylvania, another elite offensive line talent. So, Gamecocks continue to recruit well there as far as the high school ranks go. So hopefully that pays off for them down the road. All right. So don't forget the morning show later today. Follow along for the visit updates and portal stuff as we continue to dig for new names and see what happens with the Gamecocks as they try to rebuild this roster. And don't forget the women's basketball game tonight. Download the Chief Sports app. Please follow Inside the Gamecocks at Gamecock Show. Do want to thank everyone. I made a mention yesterday on coffee of hitting the subscribe button on our YouTube channel and to get over 17,000. And it's this morning, I woke up, lo and behold, way over 17,000. So thank you. Thank you, good folks and good listeners out there. It's probably one of the most exciting episode ever, but it's slowing down a little bit. We'll continue to get topical on football here on coffee each and every weekday. I'll be back tomorrow. Other than that, see you on the show. It's Smorgasbord Day. JC's Coffee's over. I'm out. Holla.